If you like what you're hearing on the Security Ledger podcast, consider subscribing to one of our newsletters like the Daily Ledger or the Weekly Ledger. You can learn more and sign up at securityledger.com/subscribe. Hello and welcome to the Security Ledger podcast. I'm Paul Roberts, editor-in-chief at the Security Ledger. In this week's episode of the podcast, number 125, if you thought you knew all about efforts by the government of Russia to influence U.S. politics around the 2016 presidential contest, think again. Two major reports prepared for the U.S. Senate Select Committee on Intelligence and released over the weekend make the case that Russia's online influence and disinformation campaigns were far older, more wide-ranging, and influential than anyone knew. The two reports, one by Oxford University and the other by the consulting group New Knowledge, document Russia's growing use of social media, including Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, to sway hearts and minds in the United States. The activity stretches back to 2013, long before President Donald Trump declared his candidacy. More important, it has continued long after he won that office in November 2016. In fact, social media activity linked to Russia's Internet Research Agency increased in 2017, in the period after Trump won the election. And, as our guest this week tells us, Russia's online influence and disinformation campaigns haven't let up despite all the scrutiny. In fact, they continued throughout the 2018 midterms and are going on up to the current day. Priscilla Moriucci is the Director of Strategic Threat Development at the firm Recorded Future. In this conversation with the Security Ledger podcast, Priscilla and I talk about the joint reports on Russian influence operation, how those operations worked, and what they mean for the future of U.S. politics, U.S. policy, and for our democracy.
I'm Priscilla Moriucci. I lead nation-state threat research at Recorded Future.
Priscilla, welcome back to the Security Ledger podcast. It's great to speak with you again.
Thanks, you too, Paul.
The reason we're talking is you're one of the go-to people on nation-state and APT threats. We had two blockbuster reports that came out in recent days, following on some congressional reports as well, both concerning Internet Research Agency, the troll farm that the Russian government supported and used. And I guess, Priscilla, maybe just talk about each of these reports and what they add to our already pretty broad knowledge of what IRA was up to.
Yeah, sure. So the two reports were commissioned by the Senate Select Intelligence Committee. These companies and academic institutions were given access to data from various social media companies that the Senate had collected. And these kind of companies and institutions were then asked to kind of analyze that data and, you know, present their results. By and large, the two reports have similar conclusions, right? And they read, you know, in looking at the data sets. Some of the most interesting ones, I think, are first that they looked at, you know, this data that was primarily from 2015 to 2017, right? So around the presidential election in 2016, and expanded sort of the public understanding of how extensive the Russian influence campaign was during that time, how many social media platforms they were employing and utilizing, right? The extent of the reach that the Internet Research Agency in particular, and kind of the Russian message, right? The reach of that message among Americans, you know, the types of media that they were using, right? You know, the YouTube videos, right? So, you know, sort of before these reports, you know, the public knowledge had really, you know, been just around basically Facebook and Twitter, right? And this has
right.
really expanded our understanding of how extensive these activities were at that time.
And just to be clear, the two reports, one is from Oxford University, the other is from a group called New Knowledge. Right. What do we know about the two organizations that analyze this data for the Senate Select Intelligence Committee?
Right. So obviously, Oxford University is a highly reputable, or University of Oxford, I guess, as you would say it.
Never heard of them. Are they good? What do they do?
They've obviously got a good reputation. Yeah, so obviously that, you know, they've done some work in the past on profiling, right, of social media. I don't know as much from my own perspective about this group New Knowledge.
I think one of the really interesting conclusions or inferences, and this is, I think, from the New Knowledge report, was that the social media networks that have testified before Congress about these influence operations either did not fully understand what was going on themselves, or perhaps were dissembling about what they actually knew to be going on with these influence operations, particularly around efforts to affect voting and voting patterns. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I mean, I think that there's sort of dueling running narratives, right, about what was going on in the world and the social media companies' understanding of Russian, in particular, disinformation operations, you know, before the 2016 election. You know, obviously hindsight is 2020, right? So when looking back and you have all of the data presented to you, as these companies do, you can come to the conclusion that maybe companies should have noticed things, right, or done certain things differently. That's sort of a hindsight notion. But at the same time, you know, we have seen that some of these social media companies haven't been 100% forthcoming, right, to with the extent of data, right, that they may have. I think that was it's important conclusion, right, for this report. But, you know, from my perspective, it was an ongoing, right, an ongoing process for the companies and for the public to understand what was happening at that time. And, you know, I don't think all the blame can be placed on the companies themselves necessarily.
What are these campaigns, as we're looking at this information in this report, if you were to describe it for somebody, I mean, what do these campaigns really look like? What did they involve in terms of, you know, online disinformation efforts? Obviously, we know about the sort of, you know, phony Facebook groups, you know, the sort of that were designed to get people, you know, riled up about whatever, immigration or Hillary Clinton's emails or whatever. But how extensive were these? What were some of the different tools in the toolbox of Internet Research Agency?
Right. So, you know, the two reports talk about first kind of the breadth of platforms, right? Social media platforms that are used. We touched on this a little bit earlier, right? In addition to Twitter and Facebook, there was also extensive use of YouTube, Tumblr, Instagram,
even Meetup. They said Meetup.
Google Plus, right? I mean,
yeah, Google Plus, yeah, right. Pretty much the only people on Google Plus, yeah.
So one, from the breadth of platforms, I think the analysis or the conclusion, there was a conclusion reached about, you know, the Russian understanding of the American social media landscape, the sort of blanket approach, right, that they were covering all these bases, and they had a really in-depth knowledge of social media and the way that Americans in particular interact and what would kind of draw the attention. So that would be first and foremost. One is just, you know, the breadth of platforms, right, and the analysis stemming from that, which was just the extent to which the Russians really deeply understand, right, the American media and social media landscape. Second, I think some of the tactics, right, was another sort of the big takeaways, right? They spent a lot of time on discussing the tactics that the Russian accounts and operators were using, things like, you know, the use of memes, for example, right? Creating memes that would just get, you know, continuously reposted or liked, for example. These idea that they would amplify these narratives, right, especially conspiratorial narratives, you know, that were kind of already out there, but that the accounts then just sort of amplified the distribution and the attention, right, paid to these particular narratives.
Yeah, that they're not always necessarily cooking up these ideas or conspiracies, that often they're just kind of putting weight behind things that appear organically, right?
Yeah, I think a lot of focus, especially from the Twitter and Facebook data, you know, has been around the Internet Research Agency creating its own content, right? And then propagating that sort of fake news.
Which they did.
Which they certainly did, right? But I think these reports show us that there's also this other methodology which is, from our perspective, you know, from what I've been looking at, something that the social media accounts today, right, from the midterm elections on, have been doing more, which is amplifying these existing either, you know, hyper-partisan or conspiratorial narratives, as opposed to kind of just creating their own fake news content.
One of the things that surprised me was how much activity actually happened after the election. 2017, if you look at the number of Facebook posts and Twitter posts, you know, linked back to IRA, 2017 is actually a bigger year than 2016.
Right. And that's, I think that's incredibly important for us to realize that this is not a short-term operation, right? It was not even a specifically election-centric operation, right? It's a very long-term attempt, right, to influence the way, you know, that Americans feel, right, about our country, right, our politics, and to have just sort of continue this deep understanding of the American, you know, social media and public interest landscape, and to affect it. You know, and that's what we've seen, you know, up until today, to be honest.
Yeah. And I guess it's important to realize that social media isn't the only avenue, right? I know, for example, there's been articles written. I remember, I think Ben Schreckinger at Politico wrote a really interesting article about websites catering to U.S. veterans that were basically overrun with these ads from groups promoting this kind of far-right nationalist narrative, you know, really just divisive stuff, all on this website that was basically kind of a job site for veterans. Mm-hmm. And we had reported on the U.S. Patriot Army, you know, this effort to create something like a fifth column in the United States. You know, we focus on social media, these big platforms, but they're probably not the extent of this.
No, it doesn't appear that they are. And these reports do allude to some other kind of websites that the Internet Research Agency operated, right, that were specifically sort of designed to do some of the things you're discussing, right? Target specific groups of people, mm-hmm. kind of undermine their faith in, you know, American institutions, American government, the ability of their elected representatives to represent their views, right? And just sort of continue that narrative.
Some of these activities were actually part of efforts to actually recruit human assets within the United States to do more on the ground stuff, that this wasn't merely just trying to get eyeballs and change minds via online means, that there was more traditional spycraft at work here, trying to find and recruit individuals who might be able to then do on the ground operations.
That, and also the sort of the selling of merchandise, right? The merch, as the report called it, you know, that these sites that the Internet Research Agency had set up ostensibly to obtain greater interaction, right, yeah, with real Americans, identify Americans who might be willing to assist them, you know, unknowingly, most likely, mm-hmm. right? In sort of propagating this influence and getting actual real people involved. Mm-hmm. There was quite, you know, it takes this kind of misinformation or disinformation, you know, operation one step further, right? Mm-hmm. By identifying and profiling specific individuals and then manipulating those people, right, to propagate this message, most likely unknowingly.
Should we be surprised by any of this? Because honestly, when you read about, you know, IRA's activities, they're not so different from what many companies do to promote their merchandise and services online. I mean, in some ways, what they're doing is harnessing these social media advertising platforms as they've been designed to operate. But they're not doing anything wholly different from how any, you know, marketing department in a modern company would do.
No, you're right. And some of the terminology used in these two reports are marketing terminology and techniques, right? Like click-through rates, and, you know, when looking at talking about the ads, right? How the impact of the ads and how many clicks and reposts and all that stuff. So yeah, I think, you know, you could, an argument can certainly be made that, you know, tactically, you know, the Internet Research Agency are just using techniques that are used by companies every day to target users, to target their messages, right? Their marketing messages. So I don't think that we should be, you know, as a society, we should be surprised that a foreign hostile government would then use those same techniques to try to spread their own messages, right? I think what seems to be sort of taking us all collectively, you know, aback a little bit is, one, the extent to which all of our data, right, has the ability to be, I guess you call it, weaponized, right, and used against us, you know, by foreign governments, not just by companies, right? And a lot of people don't quite understand the extent to which the information, the clicking they do online, the engagements they have on the internet reveal a larger profile about them as a person, right? And how that profile and that data can be used and exploited for commercial purposes, but also for this other sort of much more nefarious purpose, you know, by sort of foreign hostile governments.
You know, one of the observations was just how much activity there was targeted at African Americans, the Black population in America. Obviously, we look back at 2015 and 2016, there was a lot of media attention and certainly a lot of heat and light around movements like Black Lives Matter. Those kind of grew up organically out of, you know, tragedies in the Black community, shootings and so on. But they really seem to be seized upon by IRA and used to seed dissension and discord. How much of that do you think was merely just efforts to kind of undermine the stability of the United States? And how much of it was a long-term play to suppress voting activity around the 2016 election? Or did it maybe start out as one and turn into another? Or actually those two things, those two goals are not at odds with each other?
No, I think the two goals are not at odds with each other, and that the report, the New Knowledge one, I believe, does conclude that especially the activity around, you know, these sort of sites that the IRA set up targeting African Americans, right, Black Matters, for example, was actually designed to suppress minority voter turnout. So I think that's where we get into the real world implications of disinformation, right? These largely virtual campaigns, right? Yeah. In which these pages, these movements, this amplifying of conspiratorial narratives, right? Mm-hmm. It's all leading to these real world outcomes, right? And the effects may be, you know, people won't go out and vote anymore, right? Because just the accumulation of what they've read and they've been engaged in over time discourages them from thinking their vote will have an impact. You know, it's more than just kind of creating distrust amongst people or in the government, right? But actually feeding, you know, these narratives that are going around about the futility, right, mm-hmm. of engaging in mm-hmm. the political process. And that's where democracy falls down, right? When people are not engaged. I think that's really the part about these reports and these influence campaigns more broadly that we should really be concerned about, right?
Well, I mean, you study this for a living, and obviously Recorded Future, the company you work for, you know, you're in the business of helping companies to kind of put their arms around this threat intelligence problem, you know, understanding what's being kind of said about your company and what threats are lurking out there and social media and the, you know, cyber underground and so on. What is the solution for this, given that, you know, we live in a free and open democratic society. We have the First Amendment protecting people's, you know, free speech rights. You know, we're not going to be able to filter this stuff out. Is the antidote just education and awareness so that now we know about this, these types of campaigns, those campaigns become less effective or people are more look at them with kind of a jaded eye?
From my perspective, it's going to take a lot of things, right? First, we have to get to the stage where we understand all of the players involved, right, and their goals. And then we can move to educating users of the platforms and internet users broadly. And then, you know, then we get to the point where we can assess what that means for our democracy, for example. And then maybe there's a point where policy, you know, lawmakers and policy have to step in. But I really believe that we're still at the sort of learning and understanding phase. But even with these two reports, you know, how extensively they've broadened kind of the public knowledge an understanding of the Russia-specific campaigns. Mm. There's a lot of other countries engaged in this space who have seen, you know, the utility, right, of the Russian campaign, are engaging in their own spaces that we haven't studied. And we don't know how susceptible, you know, Americans are and American elections are to their influence as well. So therefore, you know, we're not able to truly, right, you know, educate social media and just broad internet users quite yet. So I think a lot more work has to be done first to understand all of the different players involved. And then to get to the point where, you know, users of social media platforms and interest groups, you know, understand that the forums they're interacting in, right, are not kind of 100% pure, right? Mm-hmm. That the message is that there are various groups, entities, companies, governments, right, vying for their attention. And, in, you know, now we live in a world in which some of those, you know, groups vying for the attention of American voters, right, are hostile foreign governments, you know, with messages that are actually damaging, right, to our country and democracy. And so that's kind of the next step. It's an unfortunately, in my opinion, a really long process. Mm. That hopefully we can get a better understanding of at least before the 2020 presidential election.
Wait, are you telling me that not everything is as it seems on Facebook?
Shockingly.
You mean what I'm seeing on Facebook isn't reality?
Well, I think it's not just that. It's the amplification,
I know, right?
Right. So that's one of the things that we saw, for example, in the 2018 midterms was just the amplification of these, you know, hyper partisan narratives and these outlooks and these opinion pieces, right, that were really just extreme or violent imagery or something like that. And the amplification just raises the temperature on that, right? Raises the number of people who are seeing it. And, you know, there's studies about sort of crowd group think, right? Once something has been reposted however many times and so many people have read it, right, it becomes something that people just assume, right, or believe. And so it's not that like, oh, stuff on Facebook isn't real, right? It's like, you know, this continuous amplification of these really conspiratorial narratives become real to people over time.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned 2018 midterms. These reports are both retrospective. I think they both just have 2015, 2016, 2017 data. When we look at 2018 in a few months' time or whatever, what do you think we'll see in terms of this activity? Will it have dropped off or will it be going as strong as ever? I mean, does Recorded Future have any insight on that?
Yeah, so we did some work around the midterm elections following Russian social media operations on a few different platforms. And what we saw was from at the time, what we knew at the time, right, was kind of an evolution in tactics. Before these reports came out, the understanding was kind of that the Internet Research Agency was creating their own content, right, the sort of propagation of fake news. And then that was kind of the basis for a lot of the interactions, the reposting on social media sites, right? These two reports show that wasn't necessarily the breadth of their operations. And that's what we saw more during the 2018 election, was not the creation of this kind of fake news, right, or verifiably false information, but just this amplification of these really hyper-partisan perspectives, right, or sharply polarized perspectives on legitimate news stories. So for example, much of the content, you know, that we see distributed by these Russian social media accounts on a daily basis are actually just sort of sharply political or sharply partisan perspectives on real news, as opposed to this kind of fake news, right? We saw, you know, these Russian accounts supporting specific candidates, right, in the election, supporting specific policy positions at a local and even down to, you know, governor and House of Representatives levels. I don't think that either of these reports got into, you know, if there was support from, you know, the Russian accounts in 2016 for any of the kind of local level races, you know, governor, Senate, House.
Down ballot races, yeah.
Yeah, the down ballot races, we saw a lot of that in the 2018, obviously, because it wasn't a presidential election, of course, but a lot of that involvement and that support of the down ballot races and these very specific policy positions that President Trump has publicly supported.
It didn't seem to do Republicans that much good. I don't know. To the outcome of the 2018 election, which were generally Democratic gains, say that there's a limit to how useful these operations can be.
That's a great question, because a lot of the accounts we follow are generally reposting much of the same content, right? Some same perspectives on the same content. And you could say they're kind of in their own kind of sounding chamber, right? So perhaps there is an extent to which these messages can actually be amplified if they're all sort of preaching to their own choirs. I don't have a great metric for measuring, right, how useful it was for these specific candidates. Some of the candidates that the Russian accounts supported were elected, others were not, right? You know, there are policy positions that the accounts have taken, right, that have been, you know, supported with laws that have passed, you know, since 2016, others not. You know, I think one of the things we did see in the 2018 midterms was the narrative of voter fraud. So
yeah,
when it be clear, you know, that the House of Representatives was going to change hands, we saw this pretty immediate shift among the accounts that we were looking at propagating these kind of...
They're stealing the election type narratives.
Yeah, the stories about, hey, there's voter fraud in X district in Y state. And, you know, it's so endemic. That's how, you know, the House changed hands. And that's another sort of extension of this, like the real world consequences of these online virtual operations are decreasing people's willingness to go out and vote because they feel like the vote is already determined, right? And theirs won't have any impact.
Okay, final question. They, you know, group this under the term computational propaganda. Given that it's computational propaganda, is there a way for these massive social media platforms to address it or stifle it using their own computational means? And in other words, to automate this, or is it really just they need to fill up warehouses with human beings who can look through and figure out what's a sort of cynical influence operation and what's a real, you know, comment or ad or page?
I think you can have both. So we see this spectrum, right, of if you could call it sophistication, right? Sophistication across these, you know, computational or disinformation campaigns, right? You see everything from the kind of automated bots, right, that just kind of repost news and articles and things all the way up to, you know, the types of activities, you know, in these two reports, you know, from Oxford and New Knowledge, where you have active engagement and targeting, right, of American citizens to, you know, further the goals of these Russian internet research agencies. So, you know, I think you can use machine learning. I think you can utilize, you know, data science to weed out some of the lower end, like registering accounts, for example, from a St. Petersburg IP that was associated with the Internet Research Agency, right? Those type of things, machines can do really well, right, at countering, but you will certainly have to have a human element on top of that to make the decisions about what the thresholds are for some of the more subtler or sophisticated tactics.
Sobering. So this stuff is still going on. It's a factor out there. And as we look at a divided and somewhat poisonous political environment, I guess we're not wrong to say there's an element of that that is being stoked by our enemies abroad.
Yeah, I think we should assume that it's a fact of life for the foreseeable future, that we need to educate ourselves and understand the environment in which we're interacting.
Priscilla Moriucci of Recorded Future, thank you so much for coming in and speaking to us on Security Ledger Podcast.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me, Paul.
Now we'll do it again. Priscilla Moriucci is the Director of Strategic Threat Development at firm Recorded Future.